Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
12 months in the making, it is our year-end movie special featuring our picks for the best moments from the very best movies of the year.
Plus, we'll share our choices for Entertainer of the Year.
All that and, of course, the big sell right now on Inside Pop.
Happy holidays, everyone. I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and this is Inside Pop, your deep dive inside the world of pop culture. And it's our very, very special year-end movie moments.
It is our last episode of the year, and we saved a really, really good one for last. And since it's the holiday season, we would like to ask you for just a small gift. Just consider it a digital stocking stuffer. We would love for you to head to iTunes, find us, Inside Pop, and give us a quick rating and review to let the world know how much you like our podcast. We would very much appreciate it. Now let's get to our favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, and just so you guys know, we love to do our year-end list, but this list, and we did this in the past as well, we're going to say our favorite movies is not a best of top 10 list of our movies. We're talking about some movie moments, some scenes, some performances, things that really stood out to us this year. And if you're a longtime listener or just joining us, you know we spend a lot of time in theaters. We spend an extra amount of time in theaters in the end of the year because that's when Hollywood studios love to push the films that they believe are awards contenders for the Golden Globes and the Oscars and the Producers and Directors Guild Awards. I want to say, though, this year feels like a significant exception because I think consistently throughout the entire calendar year, we have had some incredible films, and they have made it to our best movie moments lists.
Yeah, that's a nice little teaser. Yeah, I definitely have films that are, the release dates are spread from February all the way into this fall movie season. So that's nice. I think there's maybe a trend, just the way TV doesn't have seasons anymore. You know, big, giant Marvel blockbusters are being released in March and also in November. I think, yeah, the release dates are spreading out a little bit, and that's nice to have quality throughout the year, not just jammed kind of into summer months and then into fall months.
Yeah, tell me about it. It's also just helpful for my schedule, guys. I am in theaters a lot. I mean, literally the last couple weekends, I had seen like 4 movies a weekend because they're just like, everybody's pushing their films. And I was like, I can't do this, guys. I like this. Keep spreading it out through the year, Hollywood, okay?
Yeah. That it is very much appreciated. And, you know, Amita, when I look back on 2018, and all of the movies that I really enjoyed, and all the movies that I still want to see, but I know a little bit about them. One thing that keeps coming up for me is that, obviously, when we survive what we're going through now in our country, and history looks back on 2018, I think people always like looking back on, well, what were the movies saying about the time in which we lived? And I think 2018 is interesting because this is maybe the first year that movies that were filmed post the inauguration of our current president are now in theaters. And so I feel like I've heard a lot of filmmakers talking about how in one way or another, the films that came out this year are in response to our current president and the current administration. So I think that's what's going to be interesting about 2018 when people look back on it. You know, they'll say, oh, right, I can see why Black Klansman hit a chord with people because, you know, et cetera. So I think that's going to be interesting about 2018. And I see that in some of my picks. What about you?
I definitely see it in some of my picks. I feel like I feel it more just in the atmosphere of how certain choices were made in these films. And we'll go deeper into that maybe once we get into our picks. But, you know, there are certain moments and certain themes that are thrown into some of these films that I just feel like, yeah, I think people are trying to make more of a statement. You know, films like The Hate U Give is really attacking the issues of our time. And I really do believe you're right. It is like a post-election, you know, not a clap back, but, you know, reaction.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Trying to make sense of it, trying to resist it in some way. So yeah, it's all interesting. So Amita, I would love to hear your first choice. What is your first pick for favorite movie moment of the year?
Thanks for giving it away. if you're wondering why we're listening, and I guess it might be a little surprise because I don't watch a lot of horror films, but A Quiet Place is my first choice for one of my best movie moments, and I would say it's one of my best films of 2018. I don't do the horror genre very much, but I will say Quiet Place, the buzz around it was ridiculous. The premise of it was extremely refreshing and unique, and I had to watch it. And if you don't know, and if you have actually been under a rock, John Krasinski co-wrote and directed it. It is about a family that lives in this post-apocalyptic type world where they cannot make any noise. And it was terrifying. It feels more like a thriller to me, but it was extremely terrifying. I have not been that scared in a theater before. And it sounds very broad, but the silence of the film is unbelievable. Like, you know what you're coming into. Everybody knew what it was going into it. But I couldn't get over just the sound editing of that film and how you were really tense from the moment it started till the very last frame. And I think there was one moment in the film that I grabbed my friend next to me in the theater and I couldn't let go of her. And it was just kind of this moment where Emily Blunt is in a bathtub. And like I said, I like thrillers. I'm not into horror, but I've seen some things. And you know, like, you're sitting there in the theater and you know something's going to happen. And you're like, I'm going to be prepared for it. And you knew she's in this bathtub. Something's going to happen. Yet they get you. It was masterful because I still jumped. I think I clawed her a little in her arm, and it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And I'm just a fan of this movie. Will I see it again? I feel like I want to have that experience again, but I don't know if I could put myself through that.
You did it, Amita. We're all really proud of you. We love it when you see horror movies. You see one a year. You saw Get Out last year. You saw A Quiet Place this year. That's
there we
great.
Go. Check.
Yeah, I love that pick. I also love that scene. I think that's going to go down as one of the classic horror scenes. And it's kind of flipped because you're used to seeing your heroine at some point being able to scream, right? Jamie Lee Curtis is in the closet hiding from Michael Myers. She has to be quiet, but at some point you get that release of her screaming, but you don't get that in Quiet Place. You're not allowed to scream or else you'll die. So I really love that pick. That's great.
Yay. Awesome. Yeah. What is your pick?
My first pick for favorite movie moment of 2018 comes from the very strange, really wonderfully made Sorry to Bother You by Boots Riley. I enjoyed this movie a lot. I thought it was really refreshing to see a film that somehow got snuck into the mainstream that is as bizarre and challenging in terms of theme and delivery as Sorry to Bother You is. So my favorite moment from that film, I call the big reveal. And it comes about an hour and 15 minutes into the movie. And you've already seen Lakeith Stanfield speak like a white guy. And you've just seen bizarre, playful, magical realism on screen for that time. None of that prepares you for when Cassius Green, who's the protagonist, is literally in a dark place and figuratively in his life. And he's at a company event. He goes into the bathroom, walks into the wrong door. I think he walks into the jade door, not the olive door. And he encounters, and you know what? I'm not going to spoil it because I don't think a lot of people have seen Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will say that what he sees when he walks through the wrong door, which is such like a fairy tale thing, right? You go into the wrong door. The filmmakers quadruple down on how bizarre the movie allows itself to be. And I think it just gets that bizarre, and it makes a point about how bizarre because it's such an anti-capitalist film. I think it's all about anti-commerce and anti-capitalism and anti, you know, anonymous corporate worker and probably pro-union. So I think it's a super political movie. And but it just gets super duper bizarre, I think, to make its point that capitalist society is super ridiculous. And so, like, in one turn, it's just WTF, how did you have the bravery to write this part of the film? And oh wow, you're making your point. So love the big reveal in Sorry to Bother You.
It's interesting that you kind of encapsulated this as more of a capitalist-themed film, because I looked at it more of as a film making commentary about white privilege and a little bit, you know, really giving you this parallel of capitalism, but also about race and in America right now. And I loved that approach to it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think we're both right, because who has most benefited from capitalism? White people.
Exactly.
In our society. So that is, so right on. I am with you. So, okay. So I would love to hear you talk about your next pick, because I haven't seen it yet. And I really want to.
I know. If there's one thing that me and Sean would like text about, especially around this time of year, it'll be like, what are you seeing? And what did you, you know, we get to go to screenings of films, and we also get screeners of them. And so he's like, I haven't gotten this movie and I really want to see it. It is an indie film that came out this summer called Eighth Grade. Eighth Grade is great. There's lots of films about being awkward, you know, as a teenager. This one, you felt it through the screen, and they just encapsulated some moments that it's like they were in my brain. This wonderful dinner table scene between the protagonist, this little girl, well, not little, but she, you know, this girl and her dad, and she's like not wanting to say anything. She's on her phone. He's asking her a lot of questions. All of her answers are like, fine, you know, and it's simple, right? It's so simple. That's like how you are as a teenager, teen angst. But it's the way the actress portrayed this character. Oh, there's there's like this overall commentary about being a teenager in this world, right? She does these YouTube type videos, you know, of her by herself looking at her laptop and recording a video, and that's like peppered throughout. And it's so interesting because that is society today. Like, teenagers want to go on YouTube. They want to they do videos about themselves on Snapchat or whatever, Instagram. And so there's just like moments like that really clued into the psyche of like a 13-year-old, and I thought it was brilliant. I really did.
It's on my list. All right, well, my next pick is not a surprise at all. It is from my favorite movie moment. One of my absolute favorite movie moments comes from Black Panther, and I call this moment Casino Royale, because it's set in a casino, and it's a bunch of royalty running amok in the casino. And it also reminds me of the very best of James Bond. So, of course, I'm talking about the scene in which T'Challa and Nakia and Okoye go to a casino to try to catch the bad guy. And I love this for so many reasons. It's about 42 minutes. It comes 42 minutes into the film. I think one of the things Ryan Coogler is saying is, I know we all wanted a black James Bond. Guess what? You've already had him. His name is T'Challa. Or Ryan Coogler saying, we don't need a black James Bond. Let's create our own heroes. I think he's saying that in this scene. I think he's just having a lot of fun with another genre within the superhero genre, which is kind of the spy heist film. Mm. It's so well filmed. The action's so great. One of the things that this Black Panther does so well is just show you the strength of women. And
yes,
it's an amazing scene for Okoye and Nakia. And it's just great filmmaking. It's my favorite scene in Black Panther, which is my favorite movie of the year.
It's such a good scene. I'm so glad this made your list. Obviously, I knew something from Black Panther was going to make your list, and it's such a thrill ride, this movie.
And just like their little touches. I mean, I'm such a nerd about this movie that have I already bought the Blu-ray? Yes. Have I watched the scene while listening to the director's commentary? Maybe.
Nice.
And so just like really wonderful things, like the wonderful costume designer Ruth Carter decided to outfit Okoye, T'Challa, and Nakia in red, black, and green, which is also the colors of the Black Liberation Flag. And so just in the way they walk in, I want to walk into every office, party, whatever in my life, the way that those three just kind of walk into the casino, right? Just kind of full of confidence and a regal air. That's my goal, Amina, my walk-ins.
You know, I've seen you walk into some rooms and don't get too hyped, but you have done that a few times, Sean. you got it.
Thank you.
You got
Thank
it.
You. But yeah, it's just flat out great, entertaining filmmaking that goes deeper than it needed to go. And I just appreciate that they were willing to go that, to kind of add all of these touches that you get to appreciate when you watch it over and over and over again. What about you? What's next on your list?
The next pick on my list is a documentary. There's been some really great documentaries this year. We've already gushed enough about Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary about Fred Rogers, and it was close to making this list. But I wanted to discuss another one that may have slipped through people's radars. It also came out this summer. And it's just the one documentary that when any time I find somebody who has seen it, we have a conversation and talk about how much our minds were blown by it. It's called Three Identical Strangers. And it is an amazing story about these three identical strangers. So you could tell they're triplets who were separated at birth and how they found each other later in life when they were like 19, 20 years old. And, you know, I tell everybody about this film. I said the first 30 minutes is just them, you know, two of the twin brothers meeting. And it seems so wonderful and joyful and like, oh my God, I have a twin. And then somebody, you know, writes an article about these guys finding each other, finding their twin after 20 years. And then they found out there was a third one. And it's just like this fun roller coaster ride of like how these three young men meet each other, find out and see their mirror reflection in their faces and similar habits and similar ways of dressing and walking and talking and things, and how they became, you know, pseudo celebrities at the time. They were on the Phil Donahue show. They opened up a restaurant in New York City, like, you know, this ride in the 80s that they had. And then the film takes this very interesting and slightly dark turn when they start to figure out how they got separated and why. And it is really unbelievable. I just want you all to see it because I don't want to give it away because it's such an interesting, just like peeling the onion layers away. And there was definitely a point in that film where my mouth was wide open. And you don't get that often, especially in a documentary. And that is why I can't pick one moment from it because I just think that this was such a really well done documentary.
It sounds really intriguing and it's definitely on my list of films I want to see.
Yay. Please see it and let me know. I think I see a list here and I feel like your next pick is also a documentary, right, Sean?
It is. We're giving love to the doc world. My next pick is from the film Free Solo, another documentary. I think that's received a good amount of publicity, but I think docs aren't seen by as many people as scripted films. So just a quick summary. Free Solo is the story of a rock climber who climbs free solo, which means that he is not using ropes or any safety devices. So this is the story of Alex Honnold, and he decides that he wants to climb El Capitan, which is a granite wall in Yosemite. It's 3,000 feet high. Professional climbers climb parts of it with ropes, but he climbs it without anything. And so the documentary is really a character study of him. He's interesting. He is antisocial may not be the word, but he's definitely not a people person. He's not socially adept. He is literally solo. But then as he's planning what seems almost like a suicide attempt, you learn more about him. He meets a woman and they start dating. And so it really becomes this great documentary about athleticism. It becomes very zen-like, and you kind of you yourself think about mortality and fear, and why does these, and I think the movie does a great job of explaining why certain people push themselves, right? Like why they try to surf 80-foot waves or free climb or tightrope across the Twin Towers. I think just things that seem just silly or foolhardy, you really get into the mind of someone and why they do this. And so my favorite moment of the film comes towards the end. This is not too much of a spoiler if you've seen the commercial. But yeah, so at the end of the film, he does make the ascent to climb those 3,000 feet. And I am praising this scene because it's the whole movie's led up to. It's an amazing feat, probably the greatest climb, and I'm going to say just one of the greatest athletic moments is caught on film, and the filmmakers did an amazing job. Because Amita, imagine that you have to direct this scene of capturing someone going up 3,000 feet. So you've got to put camera operators on that wall who are professional rock climbers. You can't distract him or have any fear of distracting him, or else he falls to his death. And so you want to get all the shots, but you want to stay out of his view. And it's your friend up there who you've been following for 2 years. So you've got to remain objective, but you've got to worry about his safety. It was such an amazing thing for the filmmakers to do, and they did it so well.
That was actually going to be my only reaction to this. I haven't seen it yet, and I know I've heard a lot about it, and I want to see it because I think how they captured him free climbing must have been incredibly difficult. So, I love how you describe that, and I cannot wait to see this.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of documentarians who like to put themselves in their movies. No shade. But, okay, Michael Moore, it worked a few times. You have to be in every single one of your documentaries. But I think this is the best example of pulling back the curtain. The audience should see that these filmmakers are part of the story for a few reasons. I think they're one of the few people that Alex is also just willing to trust and open up to. So the filmmakers are part of the documentary, and I think it really works. So I definitely recommend Free Solo for anyone. You don't have to be a sports fan. You don't have to care about rock climbing. You'll learn, I think, a lot from this film. Okay, let's hear your next choice, Amita.
My next movie moment is from a film that I just saw called The Favorite. It's been getting a lot of buzz. It is just, I think somebody had asked me what I thought of it, and I thought it was devilishly fun and clever and extremely well acted by the three main actresses. The exquisite Rachel Weisz, the talented Emma Stone. And instead of a movie moment, I really just wanted to talk about the performance of the queen in the film, which is by Olivia Colman. And the premise of this film is Olivia Colman is the queen, and she's going a little mad and just getting older in age and going a little mad and having some issues, just like she has gout on her leg and stuff. And she, Olivia Colman just plays crazy so well in this film. There is one scene that was really interesting. The way that they shot this film, Yorgos Lanthimos is the director. He did this one moment where it was just a party. It was an evening party at the palace, and people are, you know, gallivanting and dancing and drinking and having a good time. And the queen is in a wheelchair. She's not able to walk very much. And she gets rolled in. And they keep the camera on her face, very tight on her face, while she basically is absorbing what's happening in front of her. And they show a little bit of like the dance and the joy that's happening. But then they just get to her face and they stay on her face I would say at least a minute and a half. And she's like stone-faced. And then there's no cuts, there's nothing. And then she's just sitting there, and you can see her starting to get uncomfortable. And then she snaps, and she just wants to like stop everything. And it's that moment is like a masterclass in acting. I feel like she's, and it must have taken, you know, a while to really get that shot too, to just make sure that the timing was right and her, you know, reaction was right. But she's a brilliant actress.
Yeah, Olivia, I like that you chose her performance as a moment. She's an amazing actress. She's great in Broadchurch and also in Fleabag, so two yes. television shows. And I just love, it's such so nice in 2018. Younger listeners might take this for granted that film actors and TV actors are one and the same and can go back and forth, back and forth. I think David Tennant, famously Doctor Who, also in Broadchurch, is in Mary Queen of Scots. He just popped into my head. But yeah, the actors, and there's so many examples who do film and TV equally. So you get to enjoy Olivia Colman on film, in the big screen, and also in the little screen. Well, I'm excited to talk about my next pick. It's on everyone's top 10 list. Roma yes. is the film. And Alfonso Cuarón is the director. And he's known for these beautiful, long, technically exuberant long takes. And I love him for those. And I love some of the long takes he did in Children of Men, for example. And I think all of his films, it's kind of a signature thing. But the moment and the scene I want to talk about is actually the opposite of that. It's all about editing in the scene. And I'm talking about a moment where the father of this family, so Roma is about a probably upper middle class family living in the neighborhood of Roma, which is the title of the film. But it's really about their maid. And so towards the beginning of the film, the father arrives home, and it's this amazing, amazing scene where the father is driving his kind of rumbling, revving Ford car, and the car is too wide for the enclosed driveway of the family's home. And so the arrival of the dad in his car is almost treated like a docking scene from 2001 A Space Odyssey or Star Trek. The car is just rumbling and revving, and you can tell that the father doesn't want to scrape it against the wall. And I think it just says so much. The scene says so much, like, you know, close-ups of his hand changing the gears, and there's a cigarette dangling from his fingers, and shots of the close-ups of the car just missing or just touching the wall. And throughout all of this, I think he gives about 90 seconds to this one moment, but I think it's so evocative. And the interesting thing is you never see the father's face during this entire scene. So he's this presence, but he doesn't really have an identity, which is for sure foreshadowing for later in the film.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me of that scene. That was so brilliantly done. And I agree. And I love the fact that you don't see his face. That was such a great scene, because there's like humor in it. And then there's like this anticipation about it as well, because, you know, it was the first time that he's come home after, you know, a trip, and you're waiting to know who this man is. We got to see this together while we were in LA, and I don't know if you remember, but when I left the film, I was just in awe. And my next pick is also from Roma. I was in awe of just how Alfonso Cuarón directed and co-wrote and produced and was the cinematographer also on this film. And he's just masterful. But I left the theater saying, I now want to go take a class in cinema. And for somebody who watches a lot of films, you know, nothing has sparked me in that way. And it's because of the way he made this film. And it's in black and white. It's a foreign language film, technically. It's subtitled in Spanish. It's in Spanish and it's subtitled for English. And there is multiple moments that are gorgeous in this film. Just the opening credit scene is beautiful, and it's just water on a floor, and it's absolutely gorgeous and peaceful. And I think that there's some themes about water in that he puts in this film. And the one moment that I loved is this scene in the ocean. And I can't give away the plot point, but basically somebody has to go, you know, walk into a raging ocean where the waves are crashing and it feels dangerous. And he does this amazing thing where you are basically with them and you're in the ocean. You feel like you're in the ocean. The camera's in the ocean and you're going along with them. If I was like parallel to you, Sean, in the ocean and looking left and you're on my left and just walking with you. And that, I don't know how he did that scene. They are in an ocean. And I think that was what I was just so in awe of. And again, I'm going to try to find that film class and learn so much about, wow, just how people create stuff like that.
Well, it's interesting because you talk about that movie inspiring you to take a film class. And I think you should. You definitely should. It's really fun to kind of to try to appreciate as much as possible what great directors are doing, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not just putting shooting two actors talking to each other, but it's like the frame is always rich with little clues as to what they're trying to do. I think that Alfonso Cuarón is definitely someone, you can see it in his work. He's someone who has studied film and who loves filmmaking, like Guillermo del Toro, his buddy.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like there were a lot of scenes I saw and I was like, oh, that reminds me of Jean-Luc Godard. And that reminds me of this great Italian film I saw. And I think it feels very European filmmaking to me in some ways. But I think that, you know, as a Mexican director, he said, and we saw this, he said this in the Q&A as well, that this is a very personal film for him, that this film is all about memory and his memories and recreating in some ways what his childhood was like. So, yeah, it's interesting. A very personal film, but also a film that just touches so many wider universal issues and themes.
Yes, it is my top pick for the year. We're not ranking things, but just in general, I urge people to see this and try to see it on a big screen if you can. It's still in theaters right now, but it will be on Netflix shortly. So do what you can and see this film. And then if you want to take a film class with me, let me know.
Well, I'm up to my last choice. And yeah, we're not ranking, but I might spontaneously say that this is my favorite film of the year. If Beale Street Could Talk, directed by Barry Jenkins, who directed, yes, the Oscar-winning film for Best Picture, Moonlight, which we all know I loved and the world loved. It was a great film. And so If Beale Street Could Talk is his adaptation of James Baldwin's great novel of the same name, and it's a movie about Black love, Black strength, Black resistance, and Black family. And my moment from this film, I'm calling Family Matters. And it's a moment that comes early in the film where Tish has already told her mother, played by Regina King, that she's pregnant. But now she has to tell her father and her sister. And as the audience, we haven't met the father and the sister yet. And one of the many things I love about this scene is that it tells you so much about the characters in one scene, which I think is always good filmmaking. But what it tells you is just so refreshing. Still, in 2018, we're getting all of these really wonderful representations of Black people and Black relationships. But what I love is that this is depicting a family in the early 70s, and right away it's dispelling stereotypes. So thank you, James Baldwin, for doing that. So Colman Domingo plays the father, and what you see is just support and love, and everyone's aware of the gravity of the situation. So here's a young woman who, and the father of her child, her unborn child, is in jail. It's like so the gravity of that situation definitely is present in that small home of that family. But there's also love and support and just joy at a new life. And my favorite moment within that moment is absolutely when her sister says, with like the epitome of tough love. Sister, unbow your head. It's my favorite moment of the movie. So Tish is a young woman, and she's surrounded by love, but she's also living in a world that makes her doubt herself. And she has her head down in the scene, and her sister just says, like, really tough. Sister, unbow your head. It's a command. And you basically see Tish for the rest of the film attempting to do that, attempting to unbow her head. And, like, that's one of the journeys that she has to take. And so I love how just, like, that one scene where, like, plot needs to happen, right? Exposition needs to happen. But so much more happens in that scene. And I think it's just one of so many wonderful scenes that makes such a great film.
I love, love, love this film as well. And there's this moment that I want to mention with Stephen James, who is the main character who is incarcerated in some of the movie, but there's like flashbacks and things that are happening throughout. So there's this moment with Stephen James and the amazing Brian Tyree Henry. He is a friend of Stephen James who he's run into, and they're sitting at a table and they're having a conversation, and it gets into, you know, talking about how Brian Tyree Henry was in jail and his experience, but also just the movement of the way they shot that. And then I had gone to a screening and a Q&A with Barry Jenkins, and how he described how they scored that scene was really beautiful. And it was a intentional way of shooting and scoring that scene that makes it really feel intimate, and also gives you a lot about their characters, which I think was what you were saying about that moment with Tish. And I really, really enjoyed that scene so much.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the film, we can give you a little thing to look for. That scene Amita's describing, look at how the camera also moves, pans back mm-hmm. and forth. So the camera's not cutting, but it's actually moving back and forth. So something to look out for. And just like something to think about. Think about how you're following their conversation in a different way with that camera movement. So many just wonderful things. That's definitely a movie that I'm also going to buy and listen to the director's commentary. I like mm-hmm. to nerd out like that. I love it. Well, that's it. That's it. Those are our favorite movie moments of 2018. Again, I think this was a great year for film. I love a year when my entire happiness isn't based on just one film winning all the awards. I mean, yeah. Moonlight, it was like a lot for me. Like, I was very stressful emotionally. I was more stressed out than Barry Jenkins, most likely. But this year, I feel like I can spread my love throughout a number of films. So, and feel passionate, because I'm not sure how passionate I was last year about whether a great number of films, but it feels more evenly distributed to me this year.
100% agree. I 100% agree. And it's almost so evenly distributed that I have my favorites for films of the year and could be contenders for awards, but I have no idea what actually will rise to the top, because there are so many really wonderful films this year. So an embarrassment of riches for sure.
Well, we are not finished yet, because after these two very short messages, we are going to come back and announce, dramatic pause, our entertainers of the year.
If you're looking for a new comedy podcast, why not try the Beef and Dairy Network? It won Best Comedy at the British Podcast Awards in 2017 and 2018. Also, ILO.
There were no horses in this country until the mid to late 60s.
Specialist bovine arse vet.
Both of his eyes are squid's eyes.
Yogurt buffet.
She was married to a bacon farmer who saved her life.
Farm-raised snow leopard.
Download it today. That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast from MaximumFun.org. Also, maybe start at episode 1, or weirdly, episode 36, which for some reason requires no knowledge of the rest of the show.
Hey gang, this is Jesse, and I am joined by Bikram, the managing director of Maximum Fun.
Hi everyone.
So we have some really amazing news to close out 2018. After this spring's pledge drive, we gave members the chance to buy enamel pins, with the full profits of those sales going to the National Immigration Law Center.
This is a tough time to be an immigrant in the United States.
As individuals, as a company, and as a community, we wanted to help provide resources for immigrants in the face of these attacks.
We're proud to live in a nation of immigrants, and many of us here at Max Fun are immigrants or the children of immigrants ourselves.
Together, we raised over $100,000.
NILC will put that money to good use, providing legal representation to immigrants and their families who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it.
We are so proud of our community for making such an immense difference in so many lives.
And whether you bought pins or not, you can help the NILC advocate for immigrants right now. All you have to do is go to MaximumFund.org/NILC. That's MaximumFund.org/NILC.
Our thanks go to all of you who made this possible.
Great work, everybody, and happy holidays from all of us at Max Fun.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. It is time now to present our picks for Entertainer of the Year. So we're each going to list our three runners-up and then the recipient. Amita, was this a hard choice for you?
No. I'm just going to be
love it. I love
simple
that confidence.
And succinct. It was not hard. The runners-up and my choice for Entertainer of the Year was not hard.
Love it. Okay.
How about you? How about you?
I thought it was going to be easy, but there are a lot of entertainers, singular people, who just did so much. You're doing a lot, people. They did so much. And I actually have more than three runners up, but I'm just going to give you three.
Same here. And speaking of a lot, your first runner up. Wow. A lot.
Yeah. So my first runner-up for Entertainer of the Year is Tessa Thompson. She is an incredible actress, and what I tried to do with Entertainer of the Year was like pick people who did a lot of things, and I think in many cases were involved in different types of pop culture. So for Tessa Thompson, obviously she was an incredibly busy actress this year. She was in Sorry to Bother You. She was in HBO's Westworld. She starred alongside Janelle Monáe in The Dirty Computer, a motion picture. She did a guest spot in Dear White People Season 2. She was one of the stars of Annihilation, which I almost forgot about because it came out earlier this year. She also co-starred in Creed 2. That's a lot. And then, of course, she's still working. So one of my also favorite, quote-unquote, performances of Tessa Thompson is on Instagram with Chris Hemsworth because they're making Men in Black 2, and there's just like cute fun pictures. They seem like they're having a ball. I hope that picture's great. So she's kind of dipping into the music world by starring in those music videos. Amazing performances, not a bad performance, even in a show that I don't love like Westworld. I saw her in Westworld and great. So Tessa Thompson, runner-up of Entertainer of the Year. Number two on my list is Lin-Manuel Miranda. He continues the Hamilton empire. There are three, there's the New York show, there's the London show, there's a couple of touring shows. So he's keeping that going. He is great in Mary Poppins. He is relearning his role as Hamilton so that he can open it up in Puerto Rico next year to bring in commerce and visitors and the economy to help boost the San Juan, Puerto Rico economy. Mm-hmm. And he has the most inspiring tweets. Do you follow Lin-Manuel on Twitter?
Yeah. Can I interject one thing? You also know he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
He did get a Hollywood star.
And he recently, breaking news, just this week, released as his Hamill drop, which was one of our big sales from earlier this year. His Hamill drop was a cut song from Hamilton.
Yeah. So it's like, I feel like in some ways he's like J.K. Rowling, right? He like created this incredible thing, and he keeps giving the rabid fans quality bonus features, right? J.K. Rowling is doing that big time, and so is he. And then he wakes up in the morning and he tweets these just really inspiring, earnest, heartfelt tidbits of positivity. I'll read one. Like he'll when he goes to bed, he'll just say things like, "Good night, more kindness tomorrow, plant seeds of it everywhere, see what grows." Just really nice, I need that mm-hmm. earnestness and positivity in my life. So Lin-Manuel and the Miranda's number two. My third and final runner-up for Entertainer of the Year is the great actress Sissy Spacek. She turned in three great performances I enjoyed this year. She was in Old Man and the Gun. She was in one of my favorite TV shows of the year, Castle Rock. And she also plays Julia Roberts' mother in the amazing Amazon Prime show Homecoming. So Sissy Spacek, three very, 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 very different roles. And she killed all of them. I'm excited to put someone who's over the age of 35 on my list. And, you know, I think she's just an amazing actress doing really amazing, interesting work later in her career. So she is one of my entertainers of the year as well.
Oh, that's a great choice. I actually haven't seen any of those projects with Sissy Spacek, but I love her. And I love that she made your list. What a great list you have put together.
Well, I'm sure your list is just as good. Let's hear your runners up.
My first runner up was already mentioned on my best of music list. It's Cardi B. As I said in the last episode, she has had an amazing year, just musically, life-wise. She's been guesting on everybody's record. She had a really fun performance on SNL where she revealed her baby bump. She had her baby culture. She, her Instagram is always fun and sassy, and she's so unapologetic, which I already said, but it's what makes her her. And the Invasion of Privacy album was awesome. She's a hustler, right? Like, she's doing everything, and she's really making sure she's staying true to herself throughout. And if you meet somebody and they don't know when you say "oh," that's a thing. Right there alone is a thing. And she's made it into this mainstream culture in such a way and really fast that, she's an entertainer of the year for sure.
Go Cardi. All right, who's next?
So my next pick is no surprise. As you all know, I love him so much. Donald Glover. He probably could have made my list last year too if we had this list last year, but this is a new thing for us. Donald Glover, but this year he really knocked his entertainer star out of the park with this season two of Atlanta, raising the bar even further than he already did in season one. This Is America broke the internet, created an amazing conversation with the video and the lyrics of that song. And he was on tour this year, which I didn't get to see, and I'm sad, but I heard his tour was amazing. And he was Lando Calrissian. Oh yeah, by the way, he did that too. And you know, a lot of those things were in the first half of the year, but I feel like his star is also kind of just like in this real fun place right now, because the teaser trailer for Lion King, the live action version, came out. And so everybody was like Googling, who's going to be in Lion King again? I remember they announced it. And when the teaser trailer came out, everyone was talking about Donald Glover again being Simba. So I cannot wait for that to come out next year. And that is why he is another entertainer of 2018 for me.
TV, music, and film killed all three. So that's a powerful runner-up, Amita. Powerful runner-up for Entertainer of the Year. Who else you got?
Well, my next Entertainer of the Year isn't a who, it's a what. I feel like, based on what you were saying also earlier in this podcast about the state of the country that we're in, the world that we're in, there's a lot of despair and anger and frustration on many levels. And I feel like hope has become one of the things that is, in essence, an entertainer of this year. I think everybody is seeking hope. I think that there is a purposeful positivity that is being infused into pop culture with things like Queer Eye. You know I love the show. It gave everybody the feels. It makes you feel good. Mary Poppins Returns, I tell everyone, it is this magical ball of joy. I could not stop smiling throughout that film. Won't You Be My Neighbor, everybody really being nostalgic about how pure and good Fred Rogers was. And there's so many examples of just everyone kind of needing and grasping for hope, and pop culture really responded in that way. And I think it's super, super necessary because we're dealing with a lot. So hope entertained, the concept of hope entertained a lot of us this year, I feel.
I love that pick. Hope in pop culture. That's amazing. People of the world today, are you looking for a better way of life? Yes, we are.
Yes.
Love that. Love it. Love it. Well, my pick for the entertainer of the year, I believe, worked within that emotion, hope. My entertainer of the year, one more dramatic pause for 2018 coming from me. That's it. Janelle Monáe, first of her name, otherwise known as the Arch Android, otherwise known as Cindy Mayweather, otherwise known as the original Dirty Computer herself. She gave us a lot. She gave us an incredible album, which we spoke about on our last episode, our Best of Music issue. She gave us an incredible emotion picture to that album. So she made a video for almost every song on the album and told this story that was steeped in Afrofuturism, which she's been true and loyal to that genre since she came out. It was also very pro-female. Femme the Future is one of her favorite sayings and hashtags. And so I appreciate that within her art, she really does work in social justice as well. I love that she gave us a little bit of the actor Janelle Monáe, who we saw 2 years ago in 2016. She was this character Alice in the anthology show Electric Dreams, and she played an android, believe it or not, in that. And her incredible tour. Amita and I saw her twice. We saw her at Afropunk, and then we also saw her perform her own full show. Saint Beauty, one of the people on her label, opened for her, and she was incredible there too. And it was a great, amazing show. And she's great when she appears on talk shows. She has an amazing Instagram account where you see how amazing her fashion is, always on point. And then she's hard at work. Next year, she's going to definitely do a couple of voices in animated films. I've seen that on her IMDb. And I'm sure there are just kind of amazing things that we're not even ready for that she's going to produce. I think it's been a long time coming for Janelle Monáe. I always knew this day would come that I would be able to say at the end of the year that no other entertainer has given so much, both musically, in terms of an actor, and in terms of spreading the good word that equality and respect are the two most important things that we, as people, not as androids, need to practice.
Yes, round of applause for Janelle Monáe. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. What a revelation she is, and I love the year that she had, and I can't wait to see more from her. All right, drum roll for mine.
Yes, Amita Patel's Entertainer of the Year.
Well, another correction there. It is entertainers.
You're correcting me left and right on this
of
show. What's going on?
Of the year. I know. But it's like a polite correction.
Yeah.
It's no surprise that I love both of these artists, and they happen to be married, and they happen to kind of just kill it this year. They always do, but this year they took it to another level. You know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Queen Beyoncé and Jay-Z, the Carters, consistently this year brought it with first thing right there was Beychella. Okay, what? That performance at Coachella was unbelievable, and there were so many themes in it. Obviously, Beyoncé is like one of the most amazing performers ever. Just that alone, and the rush to go find the live stream and everyone trying to watch it. I mean, I literally just cleared my schedule the next day to watch it because it just needed more Beyoncé in my life. They then went into their On the Run 2 tour, which I didn't get a chance to watch, but I've heard was really powerful. You know, I think what's really great about Beyonce and Jay-Z is that they're all are also taking the next step towards what, you know, like Janelle does as well, you know, talking about social justice. And, you know, Jay-Z has been a really big vocal advocate for criminal justice reform. And they incorporated that into their show, and they speak about Black Lives Matter, and they really are trying to, you know, educate whilst also entertaining. And I really respect them for that. They also performed at the Global Citizens Festival in South Africa, the Mandela Global Citizen Festival, which, again, internet almost broke when everybody was looking at all of Beyonce's outfits. She kills it fashion-wise as well. And again, you know, it feels like I'm echoing everything you just said about Janelle. Her Instagram, like everything she puts out and the two of them have been doing has been just absolutely fantastic this year. And I'm ending with Ape Shit, the music video. We didn't get to talk about it in our music episode last week, but that music video was such a statement. The lyrics alone, obviously, you know, Jay-Z got a lot of press about his lyrics about Beyonce and Jay-Z were talking about Spotify, and they were talking about just like the rap game and everything like that. But the way that they shot that video at the Louvre in Paris, all of those beautiful Black bodies just dancing and enjoying this high class museum, and just really we knew they were king and queen in so many ways, but the regality of how they were in that museum just blew my mind. And yeah, entertainers of the year, Beyonce and Jay.
I think they did create my favorite music video of the year. Just so well, so beautifully filmed, so well thought out. It was kind of the perfect fantasy,
yeah,
for them to realize. So yeah, I agree. They're a force. For me, the most impressive thing about Jay-Z and Beyonce is that everyone's expectations of them are off the charts, right? Like, how do you follow up Lemonade? Oh, you actually do a record with your husband, and it's a good record. You know, they're amazing, and every time they succeed, the bar gets even higher. And yeah, I think they've set the bar in a way that Michael Jackson set bars, and Prince set bars, and Madonna set bars. I'm talking about the Holy Trinity of pop music. Yeah. I feel like they're at this point now where they've got to figure out how they continue leaping over those bars, and maybe they change the whole game, which they do. So. Yeah. Great choice. I love your choice for them as entertainers of the year.
Thank you.
Well, Amita, that wraps up not just another special episode, but our year.
Oh my gosh, it's Inside almost 2019. Pop. How did we get here?
I just want to thank all of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to us during this year. And if you're a longtime listener, thank you for listening to us for the past 3 years. That's right. We hit our 3-year mark about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And we just want to say, especially during this holiday season, how much we appreciate you and how much we enjoy your interactions and just listening to us and really embracing our new format where we interview lots of cool, interesting, smart people who are creating pop culture for you and for us. So thanks for being part of the Inside Pop family.
We are always so grateful to be able to do this and to be able to know that you guys are listening and engaging with us and appreciating what we have to say. So thank you very much.
And you can stay in touch with us over the holiday season and beyond. You know, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Pop Insiders. You can also like us on Facebook. And, of course, visit our official site at InsidePopPodcast.com. You can subscribe, listen to old episodes, look at our About page, and dive deep inside the world of Inside Pop. So what's in store for us next year, Amita?
2019, of course. We're going to be back with more pop culture, obsessions, dissections, more interviews, of course, with the people that create the culture that you, me, and hopefully all of you crave.
Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.